The Profile. You're listening to Premier Christian Radio.
Hello and welcome to The Profile here on Premier Christian Radio with me, Sam Hales. This is the show where we take an in-depth look at a person's life and faith, and today in the studio I'm delighted to introduce two people I'm going to be talking with today, Seth and Nerva. Seth and Nerva are a husband and wife songwriting duo from America, and their debut album, Never Alone, was released last year. They've been since playing shows on both sides of the Atlantic, most recently here in the UK at the Big Church Day Out, and you have of course heard their single Brother here on Premier Christian Radio. But now it's time to meet the couple behind that song, Seth and Nerva. Welcome to the programme.
Thanks so much for having us, Sam. We appreciate it.
So tell me about this song, Brother. How did you first come across it and what made you want to record it?
Well, a person at our label actually just brought us the song, the album. It was by a group called The Brilliance, who's also on Integrity. And he was thinking, man, it would be really cool to, you know, get a hip-hop artist to cover this song. And then we, in the conversation, we were like, man, well, what if we connected this song to Toby and we did the singing part and he could, you know. So it was like a dinner that became like a writing session / brainstorming session. And we started thinking through that. He really liked the idea. Mm-hmm. Nerva at first was like, you know, basically she was like, I'm not singing that song.
Yes.
Really?
It was, the lyric just haunts you and just really confronts you in the face. And so I said, am I there when I look at the face of my enemy? Do I see my brother? So I took time to really, think about that. And we had done young adult ministry prior, maybe 3 years, and we talked about the importance of really thinking about what you're singing and not just go through a song and sing it in worship. But that lyric definitely was, it demanded my respect. And so I took time, we prayed, and we thought, okay, this is something that Jesus recommends and admonishes us to do. It's his word to forgive and to love our enemies. And so that was it became the standard and the aim for us, especially in these times we're living in right now. So.
Yeah, and that, like, even when I first heard the song, immediately I was like, oh, man, this song is so timely. It's, you know, there's so many divisions, everything. This really speaks to that. And then when she said that and she was like, well, I don't know. I was like, why? And she looked at me. She's like, well, can you say that when you look at your enemy, you see your brother? I was like, no, but it's a good song. But ultimately, where we landed on, we were like, you know what? I probably can't in many cases, but I want to become that kind of person. Mm-hmm. And so maybe the song, even though we're not quite there yet, it's a vision caster. Mm-hmm. And it's something we can, you know, through prayer and the grace of God, we can attain to becoming those kind of people. Yeah. So that's how we landed on. We tentatively said yes.
Ginger.
We did not know that the song would become like the main. We thought it'd be one that's kind of hidden on the album and just as meaningful for us, and we could sing it at events and share about it, but we didn't know it'd become like our main first release and all that. So that
it's
was
taken off, isn't it?
Yeah, it kind of like became the song that people know us for, which is kind of scary, but then at the same time, you're like, man, okay, God, help us to represent this well and really highlight whatever it is in the season you want us to get across as a message.
And it's interesting looking at the video because you've used some imagery, I mean, not just Martin Luther King historically, but I think even some more recent images that certainly conjure up some of what we've been seeing even here in the UK about issues with race and the police in America. Mm-hmm. So was that at the forefront of your minds when talking about, you know, enemies and how do we deal with that sort of political issue?
Man, you guys ask great questions.
Tough questions. It definitely became the thought surrounding the message.
Yeah.
When you think about enemies, or the enemies that you have. And nowadays, if you just disagree with someone, they can subconsciously become your enemy. But just the recent events, the Orlando thing, and then a lot of tension was stirring in our nation, political tension and all those things. And so we definitely wanted to capture that in the video and in the message and say, hey, let's pause and let's just think about how do we want to treat people that we disagree with, people that harm us, people that hurt us. Let's just really think this through. And so it just really helped to capture that message as we were putting those thoughts together for the video.
Now, here on the program, we always like to go back to the beginning and ask about people's testimonies. How did you both get to this place now of releasing Christian music and touring? When did you first both encounter God?
Oh, gosh. I didn't grow up in a Christian home. We were churchgoers, but that was just about it. I got born again in college. I was singing in a choir, like an academic choir that would travel to different churches, and I heard the gospel message for the first time, and I knew that was something that I really, really needed. I ran to the altar, I believe, even before they offered Christ. I was just down there weeping, like, I need this. Just growing up in a broken home, my parents had divorced, music had become something that I hid behind to feel significant and to just feel important. But God knew He wanted to just really do a deep down soul work in my heart. And so that began a process of my just getting to know Jesus and Him transforming my heart. And it's been a journey. But I'd say in college and meeting Seth and marrying him, I think he brought a I'm a feeler, and he's very much so a thinker. He just brought a lot of discipleship depth into my walk with the Lord, and so that's my short version of how I came to Jesus. Yeah,
yeah. I grew up in a kind of small town Pentecostal church. A lot of great folks. A little bit on the wild side at times. You know, we had the occasional runner in service.
Really?
Oh, yeah, man. One guy actually missed the corner and ran right into the wall. It was crazy.
Oh, wow.
But, but no, it's, you know, one of the great emphases in that church was on experiencing God. Mm. And I really did have, you know, a couple moments in youth group where I connected with God in a way that was really deep. And it was... You know, hard. It was difficult to simply explain away as some kind of psychological phenomenon or something like that. It really was this real encounter, and people would come and speak to me and say something that was so specific in my life, and speak into something that I was just praying about that I'd never even seen before. And so I had those great experiences growing up, which I'm thankful for. Walked with Jesus at an early age. In high school and college, I really began to wrestle with intellectual doubt, and I became a math major in college. Okay. And so I was kind of just, you know, kind of left brain analytical thinker, and you know, a lot of the questions I just didn't have good answers to in my churches. It just was of a particular stream that didn't encourage questions and made you kind of feel like, you know, any doubts or thoughts like that were sinful and to be kind of hidden and just willed away. So it wasn't a good environment for me. It kind of sent me into a negative place for quite a while. But through, even in that, you know, I feel like God providentially placed the right person in my life at the right time. Mm-hmm. And I would find a book here. I'd find this teacher that would really help. And it was kind of a 10, 15-year journey of wrestling with God and walking through these deep issues.
10 years, it's a long time.
It was a long time, even into our marriage. Yeah. You know, I was she kept like saying, why are these books coming in from Amazon every day? You know,
yes,
what's happening? And then I'd be in my room for hours just reading and, so, you know, seeking truth and trying to do my best to understand. Finally, I found a college, a university out in L.A. Called Biola University and got connected into their master's program in science and religion. And that kind of brought some structure, some good mentors. And since then, man, it's really helped me. I think even during that time, I didn't walk away from God, though, because I had these deep experiences. I knew there was some central things to Christianity that I could sort of hang my hat on. But at the same time, I was like, man, I don't feel confident about it. So it's sort of in a faith seeking understanding, seeking confidence through that 10, 15-year process. And I still will have things that I have a Word document on my computer. It's called Bag of Questions. And I'll still get one. I'll write it there. And when I can pull it off the shelf and look into it, I do. But I don't have the same kind of deep anxiety-inducing moments that I used to with it. And so that's been great. And through that, man, I feel like God has deepened my walk with Him and really given me a heart for people that go off to university and struggle with their faith. And that kind of led us into doing young adult 20-something ministry for a few years. And so I feel like the stuff I learned, I was able to pass on to people in that same situation, and it turned out to be helpful for them. So that's kind of my journey.
That's really interesting. And actually something that we're aware of here in the UK church, that often, as you say, when people go to university, often sometimes it seems churches aren't interested in going into the intellectual questions that people have, and I'm sure people have left the church both in here in the UK and also in the US when they haven't found those answers.
You know, for sure.
Is there more that the church needs to be doing to say, actually, we welcome these questions and we want to try and answer them rather than just ignore them?
Yes and amen. I would say, you know, I mean, we always have our weak spots, right? No matter what denomination, no matter what age in the church. But I think God is graciously reminding us that we cannot bypass discipleship and just go to trendiness and try to entertain people into loving Jesus. It's just too short-lived. And we're seeing people in the U.S., I don't know the stats here, but depending on who you read, it's anywhere from 40 to 70% that are leaving after high school. Right. And they don't know if they'll come back. Some of them might trickle back when they have kids, but that's not very hope-inspiring. So I think the people, you know, we do work with some organizations as well that try to teach worldview. And I think as part of our discipleship training for students, we need to give them safe spaces to question and work through stuff where we can help guide them and be honest. You know, when we don't know, I don't know, let's work on that together. Yeah. But there are a lot of great thinkers in the church, in Christianity, I mean, incredible top level thinkers that we're not drawing from the great work that they've done, the material they've done, and giving it to people in the church where they could really benefit. So I think it was, you know, William Lane Craig that said we basically are, you know, sending our kids out to war, a battlefield with no armor and nothing but, like, you know, maybe a butter knife or something at best. And I just think, yeah, that needs to be part of what we do in church is really create a safe space, give some training. And it's not a militaristic, I'm going to pound this worldview into your head. It's an organic, kind of natural place where we help them come to a knowledge of the truth and where they can wrestle those things out in a safe environment.
Yeah. So tell me how you both met, because you are both involved in music, I think.
Yeah.
You know, before being Seth and Nerva and releasing music on your own, you've worked with some amazing artists. So why don't you tell me a bit about that and then how that led to you two meeting each other?
I'll let her tell you and then I'll correct her.
Seth and I met on the road, actually. We had made careers out of, like you said, singing for Christian artists. I was actually singing with Toby Mac, and he was with Kirk Franklin, gospel artist. And there was a Billy Graham crusade in San Diego, California, and we met backstage through a mutual friend.
Yep.
Now, the funny thing about that day is I don't remember meeting him, but I did watch his
entire
concert.
That's the funny
concert.
Thing,
Sid. Left a real impression.
That's what I said, right? I must have been really on that day.
I know. And later on that year, Toby played Orlando near his hometown, and
Met again. Backstage.
And I still, do not remember meeting, but I do remember the day. Oh, well. But
and it was love at second sight. Yeah. Like, for me, that not for her. It's like
554th.
No, she doesn't. She's like, are we married? Do I love you?
No. Okay.
No, I'm just playing.
No, it's all good. No. Honestly. So we get hired that next year to do some work in Dallas together, some background singing. And we became friends. A friendship developed. And the friendship was so awesome and so rich. Like, he could have these awesome conversations. I remember us going out, group dating, and then we just closed restaurants having these really good talks. But I think I had made a commitment. He met me at a time where I made a commitment to just pause and not date and just really focus on my relationship with the Lord and life and just hitting the pause button on all that. You want to take it from there?
That how she gave that butt, that was the same. No. That was the same kind of thing she, when I told her how I felt, she she listed all these superlatives. Yeah, you're this and that. But, nah, it just ain't going to work out.
Nice.
You know, she wanted to be really good friends.
Okay.
Well, you know, long story short, I left the country for a few weeks, came back. I was going to cut it out. Like, I'm not talking to her anymore. Put myself out there. She's not wanting it. So I'm done. She texts back, then ends up calling, and I'm like, we end up talking for like 3 hours on the phone. We continue to talk. Well, so I think she's changed her mind. Like, I thought, my prayers really worked. God has changed her heart. Well, meanwhile, she hadn't, but she just really wanted to be good friends. But thankfully, in this case, my false perception kept me in the game long enough for her to actually change her heart.
I really meant it.
And at one point, she just, I think I won her over through the power of friendship.
Through friendship, actually, and consistency, and just awesome character. And then finally God opened my eyes, was like, wait, he is awesome. Yikes, he's handsome. What do I do? So, yeah, that was
so cool. It was a long road. And you can, you know, just encourage the fellas out there. You can get out of the friend zone. It can be done.
It can be done.
Yes, it can be done. It was worth it. So we did it. Yes. Yeah, we got married, and so we've been lived in Nashville for a while, moved to Florida.
How long have you been married?
We're coming up on 11 years, actually.
Wow, fantastic.
Yeah. It's been awesome. Mm-hmm. And now we're kind of diving into this new adventure. We did background singing for many years.
Tell me a bit more about that. I know you are with Kirk Franklin, one of your heroes, I understand.
Yeah, man, one of my heroes. It was amazing. You know, I grew up in kind of a small town. We didn't, and this is pre-social media, pre-American Idol, so you didn't know how to quote-unquote make it or how to get out there. Like, I didn't know anybody in the industry. But I was making a demo, and I got passed to a guy who passed it to a guy who was on Kirk's team.
Right.
And this guy called me and was like, hey, I'm going to have you audition for Kirk Franklin. And I was like, are you serious? Like, I'd never even met him. They seem so far, like in another land. And he's like, I'm on my way to his house. He's going to have you sing for him. And I was like, oh, no. So I was, he didn't end up calling me for a week. And every day I was warming up. I was like, you know, drinking my voice tea and trying to get ready for this moment. Yeah. And I couldn't hardly eat. I was so excited. Well, he ends up calling me like a week later. He's like, okay, I'm really on my way to the house now. So he calls me from the house. I hear him playing my demo in the background.
Wow.
And I'm just like, my heart's beating fast. I'm on my parents' corded phone, you know, listening to the. And finally he's like, man, this guy, he's like, Kirk's listening. It's just not going to work, man. He likes your voice, but it's like, it's just too this, too that. Sorry, it's not going to work. And my heart just dropped to the floor. And then he said, just kidding, here's Kirk.
Oh,
yeah,
crazy.
Isn't that cruel? I didn't even know that. Well, anyway, so I started, it was after my junior year in college. I was studying math. I was on the basketball team, quit everything, flew out to Dallas the next week. And I was, all of a sudden my life was changed just like that. Like, and through him, I met a ton of people in the industry. We went right on tour, got to tour with, that's when I met Donnie McClurk and started traveling with him. And we got to sing I remember once getting to back Whitney Houston, and I was like, what am I doing up here? This is crazy. Like, I just never thought growing up where I grew up that I would get to do anything with that. But it was a huge life changing. It was amazing. Yeah. Amazing experience.
How did the music stuff kick off for you?
Oh, wow. You know, I went to college in Nashville and a small college called Fisk University. After I graduated, I just stayed there and worked normal jobs. My parents were like, we know you're pursuing this music thing, but we need you to get a J-O-B. And so I just worked normal jobs. And then finally, doors began to open up. I was got to do some youth ministry with Joyce Meyer Ministry. Okay. And so we went from state to state, just promoting anti-violence assemblies and things like that. On my way home from one of those flights, I get up before the flight takes off to get a window seat, because I love window seats. The seat was empty, and up walks a gentleman, and he looked familiar, but I didn't know he was. Immediately, I go back to my seat. Later on, a friend from our ministry introduces me to him.
Well, she was actually sitting in this seat.
I was sitting in this
seat. So he was like, I think you got my window seat.
Yes. And it was Toby Mac. I had no idea. Later on, I'm introduced to him, and he said, I was looking for a singer, and some guys back in Nashville told me to try to find you, and here you were sitting in my seat. Yeah, so I exchanged.
That's incredible.
Right? It's incredible. I exchanged information with my contact information with his manager, and 2 weeks later auditioned. As I was walking out the door, the next girl was walking in. I was like, oh, I hate auditions. I'm not auditioning for anything else. But he took a chance on me and let me tour with him, and that has been amazing. I made a list the other day of all the countries I had visited, and it was like 20-something countries.
Wow.
I grew up in the south side of Chicago, where you only dream of traveling the world, so it's been a fantastic ride. And living in Nashville, you meet so many. I mean, you throw a rock up, it lands on a musician.
Yeah.
So we've gotten to travel with some awesome artists.
Yeah.
Chris Tomlin, Nkosi Mullin, Natalie Grant, and it's been quite the journey, quite the ride.
And then we kind of started getting hired to do background sessions, just the two of us in Nashville, and do all the parts and everything.
Yeah.
And then we would travel, do it live. And so I was like, it's kind of
work
singing together.
Yeah.
Kind of neat, you know? So over time, we were like, that's kind of the progression for us.
Okay, great. So from there, was it then just starting to think about writing together? Or?
We didn't much, honestly. Like, to me, back then, writing was like, it just felt so beyond me, mm-hmm. like a daunting process. Like, how do you sit down? Are you kidding me? Sit down and, with a blank canvas mm-hmm. and write a song. Mm-hmm. I'd rather you give me a song and I'll do the, I'll work out the arrangement and all that. So she had some songs that she had written a long time ago, and I helped her produce an EP, mm-hmm. just a solo one. Then when we moved to Florida, we had a few songs just kind of sitting back that we actually had worked on with some friends and mm-hmm. stuff. And we were working at a university. We were going to take those songs and put them out with the university, but then it didn't work out there. Mm-hmm. So while we were doing young adult ministry, we said, well, let's just take those songs and do an independent project on the side. And so that's, we just kind of took one little step at a time. We met a producer there in town that was really good, and we collaborated and just took steps to do it. And it was like, probably from start to finish, the EP was like 7 years from the time we started.
Really?
You know, so you just, because we're just doing other stuff, you're kind of pulling it off in pieces. But, you know, looking back, it was kind of cool to just continue to take those little baby steps. You just never know where it's going to end up. Somebody passed that to an A&R at Integrity Music. And so they call us up out of the blue. And it's like, you know, from there, all this stuff starts happening. So you just...
Next
you
thing
never
know, you're sitting in London talking to
amazing.
That's right, exactly. And so you just, it's wild. Yeah. It's wild how it happens.
I'll never forget Seth said, somebody from Integrity Music called. I said, for what? And I was like, to talk to us. I said, about what?
Right.
Next, and so I was so stoked. But, man. Was...
Tell me more about the young adults ministry you were involved in. What did that look like?
Yeah, well, so it was our home church in Tampa. We had, the pastor, he was friends with my parents because my dad has worked there on staff for a little while on the grounds and kind of building construction stuff. So anyways, he approached us about doing it, a young adult ministry, about starting one within the church. They didn't have one at the time. And we were both like, well, we didn't go to school. We actually told us too, like, I didn't go to school for pastoring. We've never done pastoring. I've never preached a single message in my life. So I'm not sure why you would want us to come, but I have studied a lot we love working with young people, mm-hmm. doing discipleship, just kind of doing life mm-hmm. with them. Mm-hmm. And so he was like, that's all I want, you know? So he had us come in we were just literally, we were kind of taking in everything we could to learn about this church thing. We just have never done church planting. So it's kind of like planting a church within a larger church.
Right.
And we just started building slowly, man. One of the things, kind of what I shared with you earlier, that I felt like that God wanted us to bring and that I felt passionate about was really not just trying to make a trendy young adult thing that's vibey and fun, which is fine. Mm-hmm. We actually did try to do that as an outgrowth of a larger vision of what we had. But the main thing we wanted to do was to really help people know what it looks like to be an apprentice of Jesus in 2000s in America, in Tampa, which was one of the most unchurched cities in the U.S. Right. And so it was really interesting learning. You know, it was incessant tweaking as we went along. But I took my cues largely. There's a book by a guy named J.P. Moreland called Kingdom Triangle. And he actually got this idea from... Michael Green. So he's a historian, a church historian. He basically boiled it down to three things that gave the early church the ability to flourish in a cultural context that was set against it. And the three things were a deep, loving community full of character, like so much love for each other that it splashed out even beyond themselves. Mm-hmm. The second thing was it was the manifest presence of God that accompanied their ministry. And the third thing was their ability to outthink their opponents ideologically and really they understood what they believed and why they believed. Mm-hmm. So those three things I thought, you know, the power, the manifest presence of the spirit, character, and the mind, I thought, man, if we could just cultivate an atmosphere where these things are encapsulated, I think it would be really strong because... Mm-hmm. If you've been in church for any length of time, you know that those three things are really hard to get together. Mm-hmm. Like usually if you get people that are excited about the presence of God, they don't want you to really think as much. If you get really thoughtful, kind of egghead church, you know, which I love too, it tends to be like, we don't want too much of the manifest presence of God. You know, that's kind of weird. So, but to pull all three of those together, we actually got to see that happen at that young adult ministry increasingly over time. And we feel like, you know, definitely wasn't perfect by any stretch of the imagination, but we saw some of the most long-lasting fruit that we've experienced at a ministry during our time there. So we tried to build the services and small groups based on, okay, how do we help cultivate those three things in this group?
Well, sadly, that brings us to the end of part one of the profile. But do stay tuned because there's plenty more to come in my interview with Seth and Nerva, the musical duo. We'll be hearing much more about their life and their faith here on Premier Christian Radio. We'll be right back after this.
The Profile. You're listening to Premier Christian Radio. Where faith comes
to life. Hello and welcome back to The Profile here on Premier Christian Radio. My name is Sam Hales and we're about to hear the second part of my interview with Seth and Nerva. But just before we do that, I wanted to let you know that you can get a free copy of the magazine that I help edit. It's Premier Christianity Magazine. If you go to our website, which is premierchristianity.com, you can request a free sample copy of the latest issue and get more interviews, more features, news, reviews, columnists, all of that great stuff for free. So why not head there now, premierchristianity.com, and check it out. We'd love to hear your feedback on the magazine. But now it's time to hear the second part of my interview with Seth and Nerva. Let's pick it up. Here we go. For your music now, where do you see that fitting into that big picture? Is it designed to encourage Christians in their walk? Is there an evangelistic element to it? Where do you see yourselves fitting?
Man, that's a good question. I would say it's, yeah, much of it is designed to encourage, especially off the first album, like it was meant to encourage Christians that, hey, listen, don't either fall into escapism or just fear and withdraw from the culture. And don't just lash out, but stand in courage because God is still with us. He's still on the move. His, this kind of feel and where things are going doesn't surprise him, you know. And as long as he's with us, that's all we need to stand strong in these moments. So one side of it was that. I feel like as we're continuing to write and work on stuff, it's going to be a bit of a both and. Because some of the music we're doing, I think even Brother has spoken to people outside of the church as well, because it clicks with people, I think, because there's still an idea in Western civilization that it's good to love, that it's good to forgive, that love is better than hate, that people should be treated as equal. You know, there's still that idea. It's kind of like we're still running on borrowed capital from the Judeo-Christian worldview. And I think some of our songs connect with people like that and give us the opportunity to kind of maybe have them ask questions about where those kind of concepts come from and how do we sustain that? And then how might we become the kind of person? Because it's easy, it's great, you know, kind of cross-stitch and pretty language. Yeah, love, you know, love your enemy. And you, that sounds great until someone really conflicts with your will. And do you have the character resources in that moment to be able to really look at that kind of person and want their well-being, not to cheer for their demise, you know, because that's what we naturally would go to. And I think that we really try to let the music, songs like Brother, give us a doorway into people that might be outside of the Christian church to begin to open that conversation.
We were here in January, and we started writing some songs with Jimmy James, Willie Weeks, and we had such a great time, and the songs were just so, we just loved them. We took them back to our label, and they loved them as well, and decided to send us back here to finish the songs up. So we were in the studio really laying down a lot of the production and vocal, and so we're really stoked about what we come up with.
There's some kind of eerie connection we have with the UK. Like, I don't know if it was three or four years ago, like we started just listening, not that the UK is limited
We don't want to reduce you guys to classical music. But we listen to classical music. Like, that was our... We didn't listen to music at home outside of that. And really? All of our shows were like... And you guys probably think, oh, stupid Americans. But all of our shows are like...
Never.
They're like Poldark, Downton Abbey, Doc Martin. Like, and it's not on purpose. Like, I don't know why, but we'll start watching
these shows.
And we're like, man, these are really good shows. Yeah. And then the music, we're like, really good music. So... For some reason, we came over here and wrote with some of these guys. It was the best writing, some of the best writing experiences we've had. And we were like, man, why is this clicking? And so then they started producing. We were like, man, this is some of the best production experience we had. Why is this clicking? So we're hoping to come back and actually record some more songs here, maybe even the whole album with some of those guys. A few of them are involved with Worship Central and Tim Hughes Church as well. But, it's been a really interesting kindred spirit connection here for sure, and we'll see. You know, it's been so far so good.
Great, that's good to hear. And I know you've played some shows here in the UK as well. Are there any distinctives? I always like asking American bands and artists. Are there any distinctives but playing to a British audience that's different to in America? And you know, man, feel free to be honest. If you know, if it's all bad over here,
right?
You can say, I won't judge you.
What do you think?
I think Big Church Day Out was really fun. Like, they really...
It was.
You sensed they
you
really...
You know... Go ahead. Sorry, no, go ahead, man. You sure?
Yeah, go ahead. You're on a roll. You go ahead.
I'm on a roll. That means I'm talking too much.
I sense the crowds here really appreciate authenticity.
Yeah.
And really get into the message and the, you know... And there are certain times when there's such a party, you're wondering, okay, are they even getting it? I wonder what's going on. But here, you just there's a look in the eye, and then there's an appreciation you sense for authenticity, I think.
Yeah, and a versatility, I think. Yeah, in the U.S., you know, it's a little more, typically, right?
Yeah.
I'll make this.
filter.
It's garbage. No, it's great stuff. We just might, you know, with the history of CCM genre and gospel, it's like you tend to go in either camp. I feel like here it was easier to slide back and forth because our music kind of encompasses both of those a little bit.
That's
and
good.
I think the audiences that we've been with over here kind of are... You're just versed in all of it, so it's not like a problem for them. They're not like, oh, that's weird sounding.
Yeah.
I don't know. It just seemed a little more, of the variety of music right away. Well, we did this one conference. What was the Renewal Conference with Noel Robinson?
Noel Robinson, great.
Yeah, we just, that was so
Loved
much
it.
Fun, man.
It's quite special, like, that event.
It was really special.
I mean, I'd say it's very different even to other stuff that happens in the UK, in that it is, in terms of the music, when I've been, it has been way more diverse than any other Christian conference I've been to. Because he will get in gospel artists, he'll get in people who are more well-known in other streams of the church.
For sure. And it was beautifully put together, and it's such a celebration of, the kingdom and multi-ethnicity. All the stuff is going on. It's beautiful.
Yeah.
And even just the other night, we got the chance to go to St. Paul's Cathedral for a Thy Kingdom Come event that Matt Redman was leading. And he, I mean, man, it was like pipe organ came on, and then it was like a hip-hop beat dropped in, and Governor B was rapping, and they were singing, and Matt Redman, it was just like, man, I've never seen this kind of mesh of things go this well like that. It was just beautiful. It was really neat.
But that's kind of where you're coming from as well, right? With a lot of your music.
Yeah, it is. That's why I think there's just been an at-home-ness when we get here. Yeah,
for sure.
I wanted to talk a bit about touring, actually, because I know both of you have done so much traveling. Mm. You mentioned 20-something countries.
Yeah.
And I'm just aware sometimes there's a bit of a sort of debate that goes on in Christian circles about how helpful that is actually for the artists. I mean, one person recently was remarking that is it healthy to have Christians who are constantly on the road, perhaps not tied in with a home church, getting discipleship and teaching? And I imagine that's something you battle with on the road. How, you know... Where do you fall on that sort of spectrum of, is touring with a bunch of Christians great fun and wonderful, or actually do you need the sort of stability and security of a home church that you can't get on the road?
I've seen, you know, for us, it honestly has been an ebb and flow of, we'll be on the road for quite a bit, and then we'll be at home for quite a bit. Mm. And so when you're at home, what's awesome is you're doing community at home. There's deep roots there, and you there's something healthy about being involved in your local church. And that really helps to keep the right perspective when you're out on the road. It should anyway. It helps, you know. Touring is definitely what you make it. If you're out on the road and you nurture your soul with the word, the presence, and good community, you do a lot better. Because you're in one city, you do the concert, you're catered to, and then you're out the next, and then you're in, you do it over and over, sometimes for months at a time. And I don't know if that is reality unless you really have a really good kingdom perspective about it all. Because we all have grown up going to concerts and be so ministered to, and so it's very, there's ministry happening, but on the soul that is just kind of going through the motions. And who was that said, when something becomes too routine for you, stop doing it. In ministry, you've got to stop and pause. And so for me, my daily diet has to be really, really disciplined for me to keep the right perspective. If not, I'll just get miserable just like the next person. But done well with the right community, you can really, really soar as well. Because the people you travel with become a sort of like a small group. And you encourage one another, you sharpen one another. Or if it's a bad influence, there's that option too. But intentions and the motives of the heart are huge on tours. And so
that's good, man.
I think that's the case.
Yeah, I think we're evading giving that a direct answer.
No.
Is it inherently like unbiblical to travel and tour as opposed to being rooted in the local community? I honestly don't know. I think it's a great question. And we would be open to hearing a good dialogue on that by thoughtful people that are biblically rooted themselves. As it stands, I think, you know, I feel like we're in this itinerant kind of ministry right now. And when we're home, we do visit our home church. When we're out, we try to connect with local churches in the areas that we're in. And honestly, that can be really encouraging, too, because it gives us kind of a global perspective. And it's encouraging, too, to see what God's doing in different parts of the world.
Yeah.
Awesome.
But I do think, so, yeah, A, I don't know the answer to that. But B, I would say we do know that the road life tends toward a lack of health spiritually if you don't put discipline measures in place, which is what Nerva was saying. Like, it definitely is, if you were thinking of it being the ocean and the tide pulling you one direction, it probably doesn't pull you toward like spiritual wholeness necessarily. But we have seen it done, and we have done it, had times when we've done it well, where because you do have good chunks of time, if you invest it right with your community on the road and with your own spiritual development, I think you can come off of a tour actually being in a better place than when you started it.
I guess one of the great things about it must be being able to meet people, seeing where they're at, people who have been impacted by the music maybe.
Yeah,
absolutely. Hearing testimonies, sharing stories. And then God, you know, there's something awesome too about, like you said, traveling and seeing the world. God becomes bigger, you know. You see His kingdom more vast, and there's something beautiful about being at the local church as well. So I think perspective is key for sure. And I wouldn't say it's, I guess you could ask that question about almost any area of work.
You know, bringing like God into work.
Bringing God into travel, bringing God into a 9-to-5. And so I think perspective and kingdom intentions are key for sure. With anything you do, you want to do all things to the glory of God.
I would say if it is an exception to the rule, it's an exception to the rule, because the rule is, you know, you want to be involved in local community because there are things that happens in that can't happen anywhere else, you know. But are there occasions in life when you're an itinerant minister that you won't be as involved as you otherwise would be? My gut reaction is, that there's probably a place for that. But just be aware. Beware when you're in those places.
Amazing. So so tell me about what's coming up for you next. What are you looking forward to in the weeks and months ahead?
Man, well, one of the things, she will be completing her time with Toby in July.
Forever?
Yeah, that will be. So she'll be stepping just into what we're doing full time. The last thing, and it's kind of cool because it's the DC Talk Cruise.
Yes.
That will be her last
heard about this. Yes. So for those who aren't aware, this was quite a shock when it was announced.
Yes.
Absolutely. So
DC Talk, we should explain this. So DC Talk put out a message saying something big is coming, basically.
Yes.
And everyone was thinking, what is this going to be? I mean, obviously, Brits were hoping for a world tour, and you'd come play London, obviously.
Yes.
But what actually happened was this announcement of a cruise. Mm-hmm. So there's going to be a cruise around the Caribbean.
Yes.
And it's going to be DC Talk and Friends playing every night on this many night cruise?
Maybe five.
Four or five nights,
You know, obviously is quite expensive for most people, I guess. But so it was quite a shock when it was announced. But
quite a backlash.
Yeah, and there was a bit of a backlash. Do you want to talk a bit about what happened from your perspective?
You know, it caught me off guard as well, because honestly, I didn't know about the cruise or the reunion. And so we were texting each other, the band members, like, hey, are you on the cruise? We don't know anything. And so I think someone messaged you, Seth, and said, hey, you may want to check your Facebook. That backlash of the reunion tour is just intense. And I was like, and then I found out about it. So
we got on there and looked on Facebook. We were amazed.
I was like, amazed.
These people are really mad.
Yeah, they were mad because it was too expensive or...
Or I think they...
Or they're expecting
the tour, and was hoping that
there was
wanting it to come more in their areas.
Right,
I mean, there were a variety of different reasons.
Yeah.
I was taken aback, as well as really encouraged by the amount of people that responded.
Yeah.
I was like, you can look at this two different ways. Like, you could be like, oh, shucks, this is a disaster. Or, yes, then hopefully this would generate a tour. And
because we've been wanting to tour for
years. Me too. I would love to see a world tour. So hopefully in the future... they would reconsider and think of doing a tour, even come over here a few times. But
yeah, that'd be nice.
But for now, I think I'm going to say they're testing the waters.
Okay.
And this is a cruise, and
but we don't know that.
We don't know. This is my wish, my hope, maybe.
unsubstantiated.
Yeah, that was something.
Opinion.
So
but yeah, it was wild. I think people. I think because of maybe the way it was worded, the marketing, like they thought it was going to be one thing. So they got mad that they felt like it was misleading, I think, was one of the charges.
Yeah,
and the second one was like, basically, they felt like, limiting to that only a few amount of people
true.
Can get out there
that
have
work,
resources. So, I mean, it really became this angry thing. It was really interesting.
And you must have felt a little bit sort of caught in the middle.
I was like, whoa, what's happening? This is something. And I know they meant well. I think just the marketing kind of got a little bit of, not the response they desired.
So I interrupted you. In July you stop working with...
That'll be the
I
last
do.
Thing she does.
So you're doing the cruise.
Yeah,
I am doing the cruise.
And then we're also doing some of... Thankfully, they're going to let us be one of the and friends.
Great.
So we'll get to do
the
a little bit.
So
we're looking forward to that.
Yes.
And then
you
later.
Will be one of the select few people who get to see DC Tour
together. Yeah. If they don't do the world tour, this may be it. You know, so... Make sure
world
we.
Tour.
I spoke to Seth and Nerva.
Yes.
They went on the boat with you guys, and they said there's going to be a world tour.
Yes, exactly.
We live in hope.
Planning for one.
But that's the end of an era for you. That's been a long time working with
Toby. And I don't think it's hit me yet that it's going to happen. I think you do something. I've not done anything that long, but I tell you, I don't know how to explain the appreciation I have for that whole experience. Mm-hmm. I mean, I hadn't done a ton of music when he gave me a chance, and honestly, he should have let me go the first few gigs. I messed up so many times. But Toby Mac and Diver City have become family. Yeah. They've become my dear brothers. And so it'll be tough. It'll be really hard to leave.
Yeah.
And
I'm
we'll
sorry,
still be
Dave.
For no, no, no. It's good. It'll be, but it'll be. We'll still be friends. We'll still be family, and so hopefully relationships will continue.
Yeah,
no, they will continue. But something,
But we do. You know, it's kind of one of those things. You sort of step out on and wait for the water to part. We just have felt for a while like, okay, this is
for sure.
This is the time, and for this assignment, we need to step out into it full time. And just, you know, trust God
really
to
best.
Open the right doors at the right time, and that he'll give us enough to at least eat ramen noodles on.
Yeah.
As I say, you know, the music, it sort of touches on lots of different genres. Is it slightly frustrating when journalists like me say, so what does your music sound like?
Yeah.
Just go listen to it.
Right. It's not frustrating. It's just... no, it's not frustrating.
Not at all.
So how would you describe it?
I like
it
your definition of it. It's like you said, it's kind of sort of a urban contemporary worship.
Great.
And so we I've sung with Toby many years, and he comes from more of a gospel background, which is ironic. You look at me, our skin colors, and you would think the opposite. But we put a little bit of our flavors into the song, so it's a kind of a hodgepodge of different styles. And we love that because when we would do worship, we would travel to different churches. We could kind of sense the atmosphere, and sometimes Seth would be awesome at just kind of going off page and going into a style that the crowd could really identify with and worship with. And so we tried to do a little bit of that on this record, too.
Yeah, man. So, like, we'll have, you know, it kind of is like that St. Paul's night, because we'll have some of these moments that are just, you know, the what you might expect to hear at a Passion Conference worship song, but then we'll have a hip-hop verse on the next song.
Yeah.
Like, so we try to, you know, take people on a journey, but still be authentic to the sound that we feel like we've been narrowing in on, which has this kind of soulful elements, vocal kind of driven thing, but in the context of kind of this pop soul.
I should say we're recording this just sadly after the terrible terrorist attack, which happened just the other night here in London, and also shortly after the Manchester benefit concert that was put on for the victims of that bombing. So obviously our nation is sort of reeling from these particular attacks, and there's been a lot of talk in the media in general about the Manchester concert, of how this was an opportunity to celebrate love, to bring people together. You must feel like that, not only as musicians, but as Christian musicians, that there's real power in what you do and in music. Can you speak to that at all?
Oh, absolutely. Music and lyrics go into the soul and just really uplifts. If you're in the depths of despair, it can just really speak to that. If you're feeling just ho-hum, it could speak to that. If you're joyful, it could ride that wave as well. And so just seeing all that, I saw glimpses of that concert, and I was just really grateful that Ariana was able to come back and just really continue just encouraging and just blessing those, the victims and the country at large. I think music, God's brilliance in creating music to really uplift the soul and just really encourage. And so it's been heartbreaking to see the events here, even the most recent one. And so we've been prayerful, but what we've been encouraged by is just seeing how the very next day people were up, moving, and just continuing on with life, continuing doing their duty in the face of, you know, what meant for evil. They just continue on, and they carry on, and so they're resilient, strong people. But I do believe that music and the message in the music can definitely speak to the times. There's prayers and songs. There's just messages like, you know, you can make it through. You can lift your eyes to the King of Kings. There is a plan to overcome evil with good, and that's the hope we have. And so that's the message in our music. And I pray for more encouragement, more that the people would just unite and just really see the beauty in encouraging one another. I love how Ariana just, she said that she was raising funds for the victims, and they've raised a lot of money to help. And so nothing unites like music sometimes. So,
for sure, man. Music, it really is special. Like, you know, when I played basketball in college, on the way to the game, I'd be driving in every time, and you know, and I love lectures, but not once did I listen to a really inspiring lecture
on the way to the game.
You know, like, man, I throw on that hip hop, you know, just like getting in the zone, you know. You know, because it really moves your soul in directions, you know, even independent of the lyric. And it bypasses, honestly, a lot of times your kind of barriers, mental barriers, which can be good or bad, depending on the lyric and the message that's going in. That's why we try to be careful with what message we're putting with those beats. We don't want people to merely be moved by the beats, you know, or whatever it is. So
yeah, absolutely. And I guess the depth of emotion both ways, in both the joys and the laments, you know.
Yeah.
It was interesting to see Bono of U2 fame recently sort of taking aim at Christian musicians and,
yes,
and daring them to write some more laments rather than just the joyful stuff. Yes. Interesting challenge.
That is interesting.
I think it was an interesting challenge, and I actually read that when he put it out, and I thought, you know, there was some truth there and some stuff that you're like, ouch. But you're like, you know, oh me, but amen, you know, and maybe I need to take a second look. Because sometimes, you know, we all can get caught up in the the merchandising of it or the marketing of it, and you forget that, man, we have a calling that supersedes and transcends that. And sometimes that a calling includes doing what may not be popular, but what might serve and help people. And sometimes songs of lament. We actually just recently wrote a song with one of the guys from The Brilliance, and it's just, it's saying over and over again, Lord, have mercy on me. And it's probably not like a radio hit song, but I think it's a beautiful like song that just, we sometimes need those kinds of songs as Christians in our daily life. I probably have sung that song more often than any other song, just in moments of, man, Lord, have mercy on me. You know, I need just that old prayer, Jesus Christ, you know, Son of the Living God, have mercy on me. And it's something that, and songs of lament, that probably we could use a little bit more of, and because it captures real parts of life, you know, that, man, God's there even in the midst of that, and it doesn't always sound like happy, you know, joy, big dance chorus, you know, sometimes that's there too, and that's real, but just having the whole range and palette of life experience through the eyes of Christ, I think, is an opportunity that Bono kind of threw out there that maybe, you know, we could try to hear him and say, man, maybe we could use a little help in those areas.
Sure. That's great. Well, sadly, we are out of time, but it's been fantastic to meet you both. Thank you both so much for coming in.
Man,
Thank you so much.
Sam. Yeah, man,
so
it's been awesome. Thanks.
Great to hear from Seth and Nerva on The Profile today. You're listening to Premier Christian Radio. My name is Sam Hales. I'm the deputy editor of Premier Christianity Magazine. If you'd like a free copy of our latest issue, you can get one. Why not head to premierchristianity.com/free sample? Just type your details in and we will happily put a copy of the latest issue of that magazine in the post to you. There's more interviews, there's features, news, reviews. Why not go ahead, premierchristianity.com/free sample? But I'm afraid that's all we've got time for on The Profile this week. It's been great to have you with us. I do hope you've enjoyed it. Do stay tuned here on Premier Christian Radio, because next it's Dave Rose with the best of the week with Premier Playback.
Save big on everything for your next project when you shop at Menards. Finish up projects with GE-branded silicone sealants. Tub and tile silicone is 100% waterproof and offers same-day water readiness, making it perfect to use in kitchens and bathrooms. Shop our selection of GE sealants in-store and on Menards.com and save big. Plus, check out the weekly flyer to view all of our other great deals happening this week.
Save big money at Menards.
With Robinhood, not only can you trade individual stocks and ETFs, you can also seamlessly buy and sell crypto at low costs. Trade all in one place. Get started now on Robinhood. Trading crypto involves significant risk. Crypto trading is offered through an account with the Robinhood Crypto LLC. Robinhood Crypto is licensed to engage in virtual currency business activity by the New York State Department of Financial Services. Crypto held through Robinhood Crypto is not FDIC insured or SIPC protected. Investing involves risk, including loss of principal. Securities trading is offered through an account with Robinhood Financial LLC, member SIPC, a registered broker dealer.